Hi, I'm Frances Fry.
And I'm Ann Morris.
And we are the hosts of a new TED podcast called Fixable.
We've helped leaders at some of the world's most competitive companies solve all kinds of problems.
On our show, we'll pull back the curtain and give you the type of honest, unfiltered advice we usually reserve for top executives.
Maybe you have a coworker with boundary issues, or you want to know how to inspire and motivate your team.
Give us a call, and we'll help you solve the problems you're stuck on.
Find Fixable wherever you listen.
So the goal was to create something like a universal HR database, where you can analyze the workforce dynamics of companies and compare those to peer companies or competitors. And that was something that, just didn't exist in HR. So we were basically trying to bring benchmarking to HR.
The COVID-19 recession set in motion an economic roller coaster with associated swings in employment levels. Almost overnight, the latest figures from the Bureau of Labor Statistics became the object of extensive news coverage. The Great Resignation introduced the public to arcane terms like quit levels. The unprecedented turbulence in the workforce became a major consideration for companies, and consequently, demand for labor market intelligence took off. But this avalanche of data can be difficult to make sense of, especially when you're under pressure to make key staffing and investment decisions. With the advent of generative AI, are we on the brink of a breakthrough in labor market data analysis? Welcome to the Managing the Future of Work podcast from Harvard Business School. I'm your host, Harvard Business School professor and non-resident senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, Joe Fuller. My guest today is Ben Zweig, founder and CEO of workforce data firm Revelio Labs. An economist and data scientist by training, Ben saw an opportunity in tapping government labor market data and publicly available records to provide companies with relevant, granular, and actionable information for use in recruiting and workforce planning. We'll talk about the data landscape and how to navigate from macro level to firm-specific details. We'll also talk about the implications of AI-enabled sorting and analysis of workforce data. And we'll discuss the benefits of better data for HR leaders, investors, researchers, policymakers, and workers themselves.
Ben, welcome to the Managing the Future of Work podcast.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Ben, you're now the founder and you're CEO of Revelio Labs. Tell us about Revelio and how it is you've came about starting it.
Yeah, sure. So Revelio Labs is a workforce data company. So what we're basically doing is taking all the data that exists about employment from the public domain and trying to pull it together, you know, enrich it and construct it in a way where we can get some approximation of the HR database of every company. So I started my career as a labor economist and then went into industry at IBM. I started working, running some workforce analytics projects. All we saw was the HR database for IBM. We had no sense of what was happening outside the four walls of the company. So, you know, we could analyze, you know, the attrition rate of a certain type of engineer within IBM. But if we wanted to know what was happening at Microsoft or Accenture or any other competitor, that just wasn't on the table. There was no sense of differentiation in the projects we were doing internally. So basically had this idea that, you know, what if we could collect the data that exists in the public domain and approximate what's happening inside a company. So let's say, for example, you're an employee of Harvard. So you're in the Harvard HR database and it says your name, your title, your start date, all this information. But a lot of that information is mirrored in your resume or an online profile or something like that. So the goal was to create something like a universal HR database where you can analyze the workforce dynamics of companies and compare those to peer companies or competitors. And that was something that just didn't exist in HR. So we were basically trying to bring benchmarking to HR.
So Ben, I think some of our listeners will say that's a very interesting concept, but there is quite a bit of data about the labor market, much of it flawed, but available publicly from people like the Bureau of Labor Statistics, a LinkedIn that, provide windows into the workforce and what people are doing. How do you fit in this kind of broader ecosystem of labor market and workforce data, and what differentiates Revelio's offers?
Yeah, sure. So I think, if we think about government data, it's really macro statistics, and you really can't get down to the company level. So it's very hard to see what's happening at a specific company. Another limitation is that the way that it's constructed is, I'm going to say, a little outdated. I think there are taxonomies for occupations like ONET and things like that. That is, it's a very hard problem, and I think the way those have been constructed has been somewhat manual. They rely on surveys, which really means that this taxonomy doesn't really adapt to a changing economy, is not really built in a way that can be mapped to from a diverse set of companies, and it's not so useful. So I think having a universal language for jobs is important that doesn't exist from from government statistics. But then there's also there's more of a growing ecosystem of labor market intelligence companies who often track, the supply and demand of labor, within certain markets. And I think that's a very exciting space. I think where we're a little different is that we don't really see ourselves as like a labor market intelligence company, because our emphasis is really not at the market level. Our emphasis is most often at the company level. So, if you wanted to see, what is the, attrition rate of salespeople at this company? How much do engineers make in this city, and how is that trending over time? I think these are questions that we address and try to address. And I think that's somewhat unique in this space to get really micro company level insights and compare across companies.
So Ben, tell me, how does your customers are businesses, and how do they put that data to work? How is it influencing their decision making, and what insights is it giving them that they think are go beyond that which they could get prior to Revelio's availability?
So a little bit of the origin of how we've evolved. We really would like to see a world where, just like in finance, everyone's got their day job and their Bloomberg terminal where they've got, good clean data. We'd like to see HR be in a situation like that, where they've got their day job on one screen and a Revelio Labs terminal where they've got this ubiquitous source of data that they use for any processes. But when we started, we did find we did sort of get sidetracked in kind of an interesting market. So we started selling data, workforce data, to investment management firms. So these are hedge funds, private equity firms, because really what we put together is the ability to get a deep view of the workforce dynamics of a company without any affiliation to that company. And if you're a hedge fund analyst, it's your job to have a deep understanding of a company that you have no affiliation to. So they started using this data to, look for signals that a company is performing well or not performing well. So, if there's a spike in the attrition rate of a key role, maybe they want to short that stock. Maybe they can, sum up salaries to get a proxy for expenses. It's been very difficult for them to get expenses. So, or just see how sentiment is trending, or anything that can be derived to give you a signal of how healthy is this company is very useful for them. But it's a limited market. There aren't, there's a finite number of investors out there. But I think we are sort of trending toward a world where human capital concerns are really front and center to CEOs, boards, and investors. And so that's maybe half of our business. And then the other half is really selling to HR and staffing and consulting and more corporate buyers, more corporate users.
Ben, can you give us a few examples of the specific types of choices or decisions that are getting influenced through the use of your data?
Those use cases vary a ton. There are groups like talent intelligence groups that are really in the business of analyzing external market data to get some insight into how they could better do talent acquisition. Then there's people analytics, which historically has been very internally focused, but I think that's changing. You know, they are the data scientists and the data people that sit in HR that have traditionally been analyzing HR databases, but now are in the business of analyzing, you know, competitors' insights too. There's strategic workforce planning, which can mean a bunch of different things. There's compensation benchmarking, which is kind of an interesting case because they're sort of the only part of HR that has done benchmarking. But I think that landscape has evolved quite a bit because there's so much, you know, with pay transparency, there's so much more public salary information. And also because the labor market is transforming much faster than it used to, the surveys, the sort of traditional surveys that have been used have been less useful. So I think that that's a space that's using real-time data more and more.
So Ben, we're talking in October 2023. We've seen in the last few months, couple of quarters of labor market getting a little less tight, certainly for lower wage jobs and unemployment rate, though, remains very, very low. And of course, now we're dealing with a post-COVID world and world where we have this big disruption called the launch of generative AI systems. How is that showing up in what your customers are asking about, the type of data you're trying to gather, and how do you think that those things will combine to shape the types of offers you're going to bring forward in the future?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's definitely been a really wild few years. It's a good time to be a labor economist. You know, we haven't had this much excitement in a long time. So certainly, you know, the COVID shock, you know, it was the first labor market shock that I remember. And it was, you know, I think the obvious, you know, way that's affected, labor markets and our offerings is that a lot more people are working remotely. You know, where I think we have a little bit more of an advantage is analyzing the trade-off between fully remote and in-person / hybrid. Whereas I think a lot of the other research that's out there has been about the trade-offs between in-person and hybrid. So I think that's really a fascinating set of questions because now the labor market really has the potential to be more and more globalized. And you know, clients are asking a lot about it. I think also there's different expectations around culture and the ways that people work and the way that they get training. When we think about generative AI, you know, that's a whole other set of questions. I think there's a lot of early signals that some jobs are being transformed for the better. You know, when we see the groups that are affected by this, it seems like a broad based general purpose technology. So you know, there's that paper, an excellent paper called GPTs are GPTs. So you know that GPT-4 is general purpose technology, and I think that's really spot on, and that's a really great paper. But you know, it seems like we're seeing a lot more transformation of jobs than we have seen in the past. So you know, just generally, when we think about how technology affects work, you know, I think we know enough at this point to conclude that jobs really don't get displaced wholesale. The components of jobs change, and you know, one way to think about you know, whether we'll see technological unemployment is that we have this race going on. You know, there's automation of tasks, but then there's the transformation of jobs, which really means the introduction of new tasks and the reconfiguration of work. And I think, you know, the reconfiguration of work has been a little faster than I would have expected. So, you know, we see a lot of engineers using GPT, using Copilot. And I think that's just very exciting. You know, internally, we've also used, you know, generative AI in some of our processes, and it's been really helpful and just accelerated some things that would have taken us much longer.
Well, let's talk about AI for HR. The HR space generally, and certainly the labor market data specifically, have long suffered from a lack of an ontology that people embrace. fragmented systems that are out of phase in terms of the data sets they use, the period which they cover, how frequently they're made available. As you pointed out, with data like ONET from the Department of Labor, you know, those job classifications were created in an era where we have 4 job descriptions for IT and 26 for railroad workers. So it's all pretty archaic. How do you see AI actually addressing some of the blind spot for market in the service of both not just advancing companies' interests, but job seekers, learners, and governments?
There's a few really interesting areas where this is already having a big impact. So one, as you mentioned, is constructing a job architecture within a company. And that could be, you know, taxonomies, ontologies of occupations, of seniority levels, of skills, and even activities, which you know, are really the building blocks of jobs. Now it's even easier because, you know, the way to represent some of these entities like jobs and skills, you know, now the architecture is more efficient. Now we can use transformers, but also it becomes easier to name these things through generative AI. So you know, the ability to generate text has made it possible to create purely hierarchical taxonomies that transform as the economy transforms in a totally unsupervised way, that also can be named at any level in that taxonomy. You know, we don't need a human in the loop to find out what is the best title for this set of titles. Another is employee experience. So, you know, we recently worked on something which basically summarizes employee sentiment. So, you know, if you look at reviews from, let's say, a site like Glassdoor or Fishbowl or Blind or internal, you know, reviews, that's a lot of text. So being able to summarize that text and say, you know, what do people generally like about this company? What do people generally dislike about this company? That really simplifies the whole job of anyone involved in employee experience. And you can, you know, filter by any subcategory of jobs and, you know, make comparisons. And it just works. The other is really in the talent acquisition space. So I think highlighting, you know, what is really required in this job and generating a job posting and, you know, providing some analysis around what is, you know, what's key here is I think going to be very useful at, you know, for job seekers and also, you know, the hiring managers that are putting out the job postings.
Ben, those are some great illustrations about how AI can really make the HR space more efficient, effective. Let's talk a little bit about job matching. That's a chronic source of problem in the labor market. Employers really rely on informed inferences about who's going to be a good fit. They often end up with mismatches that leads to both voluntary and involuntary turnover, very expensive for companies. Similarly, job seekers often are seeking roles based on very sketchy data about what's available, what their skills profile is going to qualify them for, often just assumptions or word of mouth from friends, counselors, relatives, whatever else. How do you see matching getting affected by AI? And is this finally going to be the solution that reduces the instances of mismatches that are so expensive for companies and individuals alike?
As a hiring manager or recruiter reaches out to a candidate, I think highlighting, you know, why is this job uniquely interesting? Why might it be uniquely interesting to you? Is also valuable. So there's a job matching component between profiles and postings that can you know, parse out the interesting tidbits. And then there's another component is just data enrichment. So, you know, we see a lot of data around, you know, profiles and postings and sentiment and layoffs and freelance platforms and all that. But just getting this data constructed in a way where we can just derive interesting insights, maybe tag you know, resumes with interesting information. Like, let's say you get a resume and they have a university at a country that you're not so familiar with. That's prestigious or not, or whether that should even matter. But you know, having some score associated with that. So when you take in information, you get all sorts of enriched data from that is also very exciting and a place where AI can play a big role.
So beyond AI, Ben, what other developments of the labor market really have your attention, things that you are calling your customers' attention to, or is a focus of your strategizing for Revelio going forward?
I think, like you mentioned before, you know, we are in a very information-poor space. Job seekers and employers really don't have a lot of information that they need to make these matches that they'd like to make. And ultimately that's what matters. You know, we want a good match between employer and employee. And I think the thing that excites me is the introduction of more transparency in this market. You know, we're trying to do our role in that. You know, that's why we're called Revelio Labs. We're revealing stuff. But also pay transparency, I think, is just a very exciting trend. And I'd love to see a world where we're more open with information. I think, you know, job seekers really are very constrained in what they see. You know, they, you know, like you said, talk to their friends, advisors, you know, family, and, you know, just get a handful of anecdotes, if that. And of course that bias is the, you know, that's biased towards people who do have good connections in the labor market. So I think sort of democratizing information in labor markets is really exciting. And that's sort of our mission. You know, we hope to increase the sophistication of labor markets by, you know, sharing and democratizing data.
So Ben, you're delivering a type of offer that have not really been available to companies. In my experience, there were certainly some companies with very, very good kind of gold standard labor market data relying on job postings, but you're trying to build more of this comparative data across enterprises, help investors value companies or assess risk in companies, help companies advance their own HR strategies. What resources does that take? What do you have to pull together to be able to offer valuable services like that? And you know, how has that expressed itself in terms of the way you go to market and the value proposition you offer your clients?
We've centered our organization around engineers. We have about 60 people, and really only 5 of them don't write code. So it's a technical organization. And so about half the team is data engineers. So that can involve, you know, web scraping, data pipelines, you know, managing infrastructure and data deliveries and you know, everything that involves just massive amounts of data. Then we have a dashboard team. So we want these insights to be ingestible and you know, easy to navigate. We have a data science team. So they're really doing models around adjusting for biases and building taxonomies, doing all the natural language processing and you know, the enrichment of the data. And then we also have a team of economists. And this, I think, is kind of unique to us, that we, you know, our economics team is, they wear a lot of hats. You know, we write content. So they publish a newsletter that comes out twice a week. And, you know, work with the media and other content partners to try to just get some interesting insights out there, just to sort of show what sorts of interesting things can be derived with this kind of new set of data. And they also work with our customers, you know, just helping them, you know, being the trusted expert on, you know, what the data is and how it can be used and where it falls short and, you know, all that.
You mentioned the issue of AI and bias. The current systems we use to hire people and evaluate people are laden with bias. It's been demonstrated in all sorts of confirmed academic research. How worried should people be about bias in these new technologies? What safeguards do you see companies asking you about or putting in place? And tell us more about how you're trying to recognize those concerns in your tech roadmap.
So I think you know, there's adjusting for biases, like there's adjusting for statistical bias, and then there's, you know, sort of demographic bias. So most of the bias adjustment we do is actually adjusting for statistical bias. You know, there's sampling bias in profiles. There's lags in reporting. You know, so coming up with models to kind of adjust for those statistical biases is a little more straightforward. Adjusting for I don't even know what to call the other type of bias, the colloquial bias, is really tricky because there are some areas where it just doesn't really matter. You know, if you are, you know, generating a name for an industry, who cares? Where this gets a little trickier is in job matching or any sort of data that is used to recommend candidates to employers or even analyze, you know, pools of talent. So, you know, it's not just discriminating, you know, this technology can't just can go beyond discriminating against individuals. It can discriminate against whole cities or whole labor markets because of the data that they have or the lack of data that they have. We really owe it to the users and the world to try the best we can and not just throw up our hands and say, well, there's bias, so like, let's just, you know, rely on human judgment. I think it's a lot easier to correct biases in an algorithm than it is to correct biases in human nature. So I think we sort of need to take a good pass at what we think is fair and right and useful. And you know, maybe that requires some adjustment in the algorithm. If we're aware of it, great. And if we're not aware of it, maybe we'll become aware of it and can tweak from there. But I think we generally tend to err on the side of taking some action and providing some algorithm and analysis, and then you know, doing that in an objective way so that we can be as objective as possible, and if there are still biases that creep in, then we'll sort of cross that bridge when we become aware of them.
And of course, one of the delicious ironies is that eventually we'll have AI applications which are designed to, in fact, detect bias. So this is, you know, maybe the Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator vision of the future of AI will not manifest itself in the eradication of humankind, but the eradication of some of the lesser expressions of human nature, like bias. So
I hope so.
You're running a company that's less than a decade old, but what do you think we can look forward to? Where do you see Revelio playing going forward, and what are the next mountains you're trying to climb?
I think we would like to see a world where HR and anyone who analyzes people does that in a very sophisticated way. But I think we are sort of in the Stone Ages. You know, I think we are where finance was in the 1960s, before it became sophisticated, before it became quantitative, before it became rigorous. And I think there's so much good talent and potential within HR and anyone who analyzes labor markets. But I think there's really a lot of limitations. And I happen to think that those limitations are in the data. So I think if we could provide a ubiquitous source of information where people can navigate it and trust it and compare across organizations, I think that will just unlock a lot of you know, really interesting scientific endeavors by these groups. So you know, we do want to, you know, provide something like a Bloomberg terminal, so that people can you know, navigate, you know, human beings in a very or sort of the allocation of people in a very rigorous and sophisticated way. So that's, I think we're in like inning one. So, you know, what shape that takes, TBD, you know, but there's certainly a lot to do.
Well, Ben Zweig, founder and CEO of Revelio Labs, innovative player in the space of workforce data and economics. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll look forward to watching the company's continued development.
Yeah, thank you.
We hope you enjoy the Managing the Future of Work podcast. If you haven't already, please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find out more about the Managing the Future of Work project at our website, hbs.edu/managing the future of work. While you're there, sign up for our newsletter.